Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Yo, 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 what is going on? What is good, everybody? We are here on the Boxing Source Radio Show. I am James Bell, lead boxing analyst for the cohort Truth on Sports, and the leader of the Boxing Source on social media. You can follow us on Facebook, on Instagram, and also you could follow the YouTube channel. Number to dial is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. 5539. Press one key to get on Q. We live on the show. Pretty much had to handle a few things on for this episode. So that is why we are starting it up here at this particular time. So just had to make sure that business was handled for starting up the show. That has been taken care of. Should be all good. But wanted to get into, you know, what happened over the course of the weekend. Of course, we had the telecast over at the Barclays Center last night. That was headlined by the heavyweight fight between Adam Kalinowski and Chris Emmanuel. Of course, you had Adam Kalinowski there as a heavyweight contender. Pretty much was, I'm not certain if he was like the in the top five of the WBC right now, but they were pretty much saying that he could potentially be a top contender for the WBC title pretty much by next year. So that is, you know, what we kind of like got coming into this particular bout before he was facing Chris Areola. You know, Areola was a title challenger. You know, was in the ring with Klitschko, was in the ring with Bernard Stiverne, was in the ring with Deontay Wilder, but was unsuccessful in those matchups there that he had with those guys. But so here, you know, we're just trying to see if he could have another chance at those guys as like top contenders within the heavyweight ranks there. So that is something that, you know, we're going to try and find out if Chris Areola could, you know, pull off an upset of sorts in this particular bout that he had against Adam Kalinowski. Just going into the background of this, of course, you had Kalinowski there at the Barclays Center for pretty much the, I think it was, what, the third or fourth consecutive bout that he had at the Barclays Center. He had been, you know, pretty much a crowd favorite. He did grow up in that area in Brooklyn. You know, has had a good amount of fights in the New York area. And, you know, that he was pulling, you know, the Polish crowd out there. He is from Poland, moved to Brooklyn, New York at a young age. So he pretty much grew up in Brooklyn, then, you know, started his professional career and had a, you know, strong fan base there to, you know, pull on for him. But he was coming into this particular fight 19-0. We had those fights at the Barclays Center against Charles Martin last September, and then against Gerald Washington earlier this year. So that, you know, they were kind of like building him up. To eventually position him to, you know, be a world title. But you know, now with, you know, of course, what happened over in the landscape of the heavyweight division with most of the world titles, and then the situation with the WBC heavyweight championship, this, you know, basically is a fight to have Kalinowski see if he could stay within the ranks of the heavyweight division. It was saying that, I was looking in here, it says Adam Kalnacki is rated number 6 in the WBC. He is also in the WBA rankings there at number 7. So, you know, this is kind of a bout here to see what would be the ins and outs for Adam Kalnacki if he could get through a guy like Chris Areola. Areola did have, like I said, those fights with let's say Wilder. Has had a long and extensive professional career. Was coming in there with 38 wins and 5 losses. He did have like an extended break after the fight with Deontay Wilder. In 2016, he didn't get back into the ring until the end of last year. Then, you know, had a fight over at the AT&T Stadium as part of that card with Errol Spence Jr. and Mikey Garcia. So I guess that put him in this particular position here to face Adam Kalnacki. And this was kind of like the crossroads fight there for Chris Areola in that, you know, while he has been a world title contender, he had been on the downside of his professional career because, you know, with those losses to Severn, actually he had that first loss in 2013 and then the loss for that WBC title in 2014. And, you know, of course he had the fight against Deontay Wilder. So he had pretty much been struggling for most of the past few years or so there before getting this particular bout. So, you know, right now, with him having this fight against Adam Kalnacki, he said, you know, before the fight, he was saying, yo, this is pretty much the turning point of my career in that, you know, if I'm not able to, you know, get this win over Adam Kalnacki, man, and you know, I'm not doing good, then I might as well, you know, wrap it up as far as, like, professional career is concerned. So there was, like, a lot on the line, you would say, for him going into this fight. While, you know, a lot of people felt that Adam Kalnacki was, you know, pretty much a young guy going up against a guy that was, you know, fairly past it. But first, you know, couple of rounds, you saw the Adam Kalnacki that a lot of people have seen in his past few fights where he starts fast, throws a lot of punches, comes forward, doesn't stop moving, doesn't stop coming forward, and throws punches on his opponent. And, you know, Chris Areola kind of like felt a little bit of those punches there in the first couple of rounds and kind of like seemed like he would have had some issues there in those first couple of rounds, but seemed to get his bearings in. In the third round, kind of like work on his defense there a little bit and get back at Adam Kalnacki and kind of, you know, throw a few punches of his own, was, you know, working upstairs and definitely working the body of Adam Kalnacki. So you had both of these guys throwing a lot of punches at each other. A lot of punches were in close range. And you just saw two heavyweights that just kept punching and punching and punching and punching, which you never really expect out there in a heavyweight fight. You know, you kind of like have like a average of, you know, probably about what, 40 or 45 punches a round, but you definitely did not see that here in this bout. All I saw was a lot of inside work, a lot of back and forth as far as like
hooks and uppercuts are concerned. There were a couple of times where Adam Kalnacki did connect well with the uppercut and then also connect well with his hooks. But every time it seemed like he was connecting very well with those power shots, Chris Areola got into the inside, got right in Adam Kalnacki, and basically smothered his punches and either, you know, clenched or just got in the close quarters with his guard up and just worked on the inside there so that Adam Kalnacki couldn't really follow through with some big shots to kind of like put Chris Areola in trouble. I think that, you know, his trainer there, Goosen, taught him fairly well in that particular instance where if you see that you had any type of trouble, just get into the inside, smother his punches, tie him up if you have to, so that he wouldn't have to get off. Because with Adam Kalnacki just throwing punches and bunches, especially when he has a good amount of space, you could see that, you know, Kalnacki throws punches well once he has some space on him. But also had the other thing where Chris Areola didn't throw anything much back at Kalnacki that would have Kalnacki stop in his tracks. Even though there were, you know, a few power punches there, there were a few good punches that were going to the body of Adam Kalnacki, Kalnacki was still going forward, still going at Chris Areola. So that is, you know, pretty much what we had in most of the fight. And it was just a back and forth, you know, encounter by both of those guys. It was just that you had Adam Kalnacki be a little bit more aggressive, the guy that was coming forward in most of the fight. And, you know, as a result, he ended up getting the decision victory over Chris Areola to stay undefeated. And, you know, with that unanimous decision that he had, you know, I would just say that with the score of 118-110 from Don Shrella and Lou Moret, and Kevin Morgan gave the score of 117-111 to Adam Kalnacki. So, you know, we basically had a 10-2 scorecard and two scorecards, 9 rounds to 3 in this bout. But, you know, that is a, you know, a little good fight there between those two, in that they were able to show that heavyweights could throw punches in bunches. They had a total amount, according to CompuBox, of 2,172 punches thrown in that bout, with 667 of those punches landing, according to CompuBox. That broke the records for punches landed and punches thrown there in the heavyweight division. So that is, you know, pretty much the big news coming from, you know, this particular bout, is that these two heavyweights were able to throw that many punches there over the course of 12 rounds. And, you know, that, I mean, that's something that, you know, I personally have never seen in a heavyweight fight. So, you know, props both to Adam Kalnacki and Chris Areola for being able to do that in this particular setting, particularly with Chris Areola being at the stage of his career where he's at, that he was able to throw as many punches as he was able to throw there. You know, he had 1,125 punches thrown. I mean, that's crazy, you know, for a guy like Areola to have that many punches thrown over the course of 12 rounds. That's almost, you know, that's almost 100 punches a round right there. So, you know, give kudos to Chris Areola for, you know, having that type of an effort in a fight of this magnitude there. But you know, it wasn't enough for him to get the victory. Adam Kalnacki, like I said, stays undefeated there. And this time he moves his record to 20 wins and zero losses. You know, stays there within the within those WBC rankings as a potential contender for the WBC championship. So that is, you know, something I'm kind of like waiting on as far as like an update as to when that would be. They were talking about it after the fight as far as like when his, you know, shot would be. And, you know, they basically were hitting that it was going to be, you know, sometime next year when that could potentially take place. You know, he would just be at the Barclays Center, you know, I would say once again to, you know, have another big-time fight. There was, you know, fairly good amount of, you know, fans out there for this particular matchup. But, you know, I mean, for me, they kind of were backing Adam Kalnacki pretty much like they have done over the past few years plus when he was able to be there at the Barclays Center in order to have his fights. So, you know, I mean, he was able to, you know, perform the way that he usually performs. You know, nothing that was, you know, overly impressive. You know, I expected a knockout victory from Adam Kalnacki in this particular instance, but he was able to still get the victory. And Chris Areola was able to make a good account of himself in this particular matchup. You know, we're giving him lots of props to Chris Areola for the effort that he had there in this particular fight, and asked what his next move would be because, you know, like we were saying, if he wasn't able to get the victory, he was going to, you know, go ahead and hang up the gloves. But, you know, he was like, he doesn't know. They felt that he was in, you know, in under Goosen. And that, you know, they're saying that he performed very well in this particular fight that, you know, he could go ahead and compete in other matchups. But he said before the fight, he was like, yo, if I'm not being out there contending for a world title, then I really can't, you know, do this that much. Can't really be out there to compete. So, you know, even though we had a very active performance here at the Barclays Center last night, he wasn't able to get the victory, and he, you know, lost fairly significantly in this match. So he's like, hey, he's like, I'll talk with, you know, my trainer, talk with his family. But, you know, who knows after all of this what happens next there for Chris Areola. So, you know, kind of like put this as a, you know, pretty good performance from you know, from these guys. I know that there are some people out there that thoroughly enjoyed this fight. You know, that with these guys going back and forth continuously for 12 rounds, and you know, it was, you know, something that we'll have to see if they could make another fight like that, or a fight similar to that, so that, you know, fans that were watching it on TV and that were watching it there at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn could get another fight like that. You know, but for me, I would like to see Adam Kalnacki there pretty much competing against a, you know, more serious contender there in the heavyweight division. You know, there are like a couple of guys that they could pin him up against, but I don't really see many guys that are ranked above him that he could go ahead and fight here at this particular juncture. You have, you know, Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder pretty much booked with fights. We'll talk about Tyson Fury here later on in the show. Luis Ortiz will be scheduled to fight Deontay Wilder later this year. You have Joseph Parker that's also rated above Adam Kalnacki here at this moment. And Joseph Parker may be pitted up against Derek Chisora later this year as well. So maybe there's like another fighter that might hint at that he could possibly face down the line. He's a guy that we have talked about on this show a couple of weeks ago, and we've had a good little discussion in reference to this particular person and his, you know, stature in the heavyweight division right now. So I feel that, you know, Adam Kalnacki will have like another stay busy fight. Well, probably two stay busy fights before they put him in there with a fairly good competition before he'll be put in place to fight for a world title there. So that's mainly what I have in reference to Adam Kalnacki and his unanimous decision win over Chris Areola there at the Barclays Center to stay undefeated. They also had on the undercard post feature bout Marcus Brown, Jean Pascal. Marcus Brown was there undefeated, had held two minor championships, had a status of being a highly ranked contender in the light heavyweight division. He was the top ranked guy in the WBC and in the WBA. In that, you know, he wanted to wait until the right time to contend for one of those world titles. We, you know, basically had news that the WBC champion would be facing the IBF champion later this year. So while that happens, you had Marcus Brown, who, you know, did have the win over Badu Jack earlier this year by unanimous decision, and now going up against Jean Pascal, who came into this fight, you know, losing three of his last six, lost his last fight to the WBA champion, Dimitri Bivol, had, you know, lost to former champion before he was champion, actually. But Eleanor Alvarez, he had those two losses to Sergey Kovalev. But, yo, he was a former world champ. Did have that loss to Bernard Hopkins. But after, you know, his fights with Sergey Kovalev, pretty much thought that, you know, his career was fairly done. And you all remember, like, about almost 2 years ago, after he lost to Eleanor Alvarez, they had him in a fight against a guy, Ahmed El Bialy. And I thought, like, with El Bialy, a guy that really didn't, you know, had that many fights under his belt, you know, I guess he was kind of like pitted as someone that, you know, they were going to try to build up to be a contender there in the light heavyweight division, then going up against Jean Pascal. But Jean Pascal was able to clip him and get the TKO victory, stoppage victory. And I felt that that was something that continued his career, so to speak, so that he would be able to go forward. But, you know, afterwards, after that, it was just, you know, something where he got like a small fight there over in Quebec. Was able to get a quick win there. And then they put him in against Dimitri Bivol. And we discussed this Bivol-Pascal fight. And a lot of people felt that Bivol just didn't do enough in this fight against Jean Pascal, in that he kind of like had a lot of momentum and a lot of points pegged down for him after that particular fight. I mean, for me, I kind of like saw this from Bivol before, you know, when he fought Isaac Chalemba over in Atlantic City, defending that WBA title. But, you know, then he went ahead and followed up and fought Jean Pascal. And, you know, while, you know, Bivol was able to get that unanimous decision victory, there were a couple of times where, you know, he kind of like seemed very hesitant to get in and get up close with Jean Pascal, because Jean Pascal was hitting him with a couple of power shots that kept him at bay and, you know, not allowing him to, you know, go full out in taking care of Jean Pascal. So, you know, after that fight, he had his fight here with Marcus Brown. And we know about, you know, the backstory with Marcus Brown, him having those domestic issues. That's kind of like where some people felt that was the reason that he wasn't able to fight Sergey Kovalev last year, and how Eleanor Alvarez was able to be put in that position in August of last year to fight Sergey Kovalev, where you saw Alvarez defeat and knock out Sergey Kovalev. But, you know, now here, Marcus Brown still going through those issues, you know, with his, you know, baby mother, whatever it is, you know, had that whole thing with the domestic violence and all that, and leading into the fight, pretty much you had Jean Pascal, you know, getting up under his skin one time where he had brought out a wig and said, yo, is this what it's going to, basically, it's like, you know, is this what it's going to take for you to hit me or something like that? I was like, yo, I was like, man, Pascal really, really went out there with that particular comment. But this was it, that cool feature about I still expected Marcus Brown to defeat John Pascal. And it was looking like he was, you know, doing that. He was boxing very well, taking his time, keeping his distance from John Pascal, and scoring points. But there was this one little thing that, we were looking out for in reference to Marcus Brown, and that was if he was able to, you know, take the shots from John Pascal. And, well, we pretty much did find out in a couple of occasions here in this particular bout. You had the counterpunch from John Pascal while they were in close quarters, a right hand squared to the nose of Marcus Brown, and boodoo boodoo pop pop, like Keith Thurman said, pop 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 pop, boodoo boodoo, and Marcus Brown went down to the canvas, and he could not believe that he went down to the canvas there, and it was just something that he did not expect at all. But that was what happened to him. He was able to get up. Was very disappointed with that, but he still was executing what he was supposed to do. Therefore, those other rounds after that, fifth and sixth round, he was still doing his thing and whatever it was. And then seventh round, he got caught again and went down to the canvas once again. And he did get up, but there was, he had some issues with his legs, so he wasn't completely there with his legs. Couldn't really get his full bearings within his legs, but he was able to continue. But Pascal, even though he was kind of like smothered in most of his punches, he was still able to land a couple of them before the end of the round. And Marcus Brown went down to the canvas there once again. And that, was a huge, huge, huge knockdown for John Pascal. Because going into the next round, round eight, they were in close quarters. And John Pascal, accidentally with his forehead clashed with Marcus Brown, in his eyes, his left eye, I think it was. And once that clash happened and it had that cut on Marcus Brown's eye, pretty much like blew his eye up. And they had to immediately put a halt to the bout, had to go to the scorecards, and the scorecards read that you would have three scores of 75-74 for the winner, John Pascal. John Pascal was able to score the upset over Marcus Brown and hand Marcus Brown his first loss of his career. Brown couldn't even be in the ring because of the severity of the cut, so he went in the ring to listen that he lost. And there you go. But that was that. I want to get a caller in here, 646. I know it's eager to talk about this particular bout right here. 646. What's going on? You're on the Box of Swords radio show.
Bonjour. Bonjour. Oui, oui.
Sir Marcus Brown.
I guess it's a little difficult going through punching someone when it's not a woman and they're punching you back. Oh, I'm sorry for his loss, man. I mean, listen, John showed up with a wig and said, hey, I'm going to show what you beat me. Unfortunately for Marcus Brown, he didn't show up in the ring with a wig on, so Marcus Brown couldn't beat him.
Oh, yo, hey, I don't know if you like, well, you like in a Hollywood area or something like that, but yeah, it's kind of like you're like a good little distance from your phone, but
oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
my,
hear
my,
what
my
you're
bad.
Saying.
Hold on, my bad, hold on.
Yeah.
All right, how's that? Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm kind of wondering, well, we know Marcus Brown's going to exercise the rematch clause, but will it really make a difference in the grand scheme of things? He cannot take a good shot. Every time he got hit with a good shot, he went down, like literally every single time.
He did. he broke down.
Yeah.
Like a building being imploded.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, man.
Now we see why Demetrius Bivol didn't want to go in for the kill against John Pascal.
And John Pascal.
He could hit. You know?
he could still hit, yo.
Now, he might be a little slow sometimes where he'll swing wildly, you'll see it coming, and then, you know, you can get out the way. But if he connects, they fall down. And look what happened with Marcus Brown, man. I feel bad for this guy, man. You know, maybe this will change his life, you know. Maybe he'll think, yo, listen, if I don't want to get beat up by men in the ring, you know, Marcus Brown, I know exactly what he should do. He should fight Clarissa Shields, or maybe Katie Taylor.
Yeah.
I heard she's looking for a fight.
Katie Taylor, Eva Wallstrom, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
Grand Chan Cruz Dessert, you know. Yo,
because,
hey.
Yeah, fighting men apparently is no longer working out for him. I heard he's undefeated against women. So maybe he could fight one of these girls, man. And he could be the goat.
Maybe, you know, Savannah Marshall, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man. Come on. Fight a woman, Marcus Brown. Like,
hey, Clarissa Shields said, she said that she could beat some of the dudes.
Now, she said she could beat Triple G. Come on now.
Yeah.
That's different. I believe her, too. I think she could outbox him.
Yeah.
But still.
At least that'll be a boost in the resume of Triple G. Oh, man. You know, I don't want to go with that.
Probably the best one on his resume, actually.
But what do you think about
the scorecards? Were you okay with the scorecards?
I was, like, trying to figure out, like, was that, like, the right score? Because I didn't – because, like, a 75-74, which, you know, maybe I guess they kind of, like, counted that – you know, that knockdown that happened in round four as the one that kind of like broke the tire or something like that. So, and I don't know how they scored that eighth round. I don't know how they scored it.
They gave it to Pascal.
So that's what it was. They didn't even score it.
Yeah.
They just gave it to Pascal. So that
they gave it to Pascal.
So that also, you know, put him over the hump. So you had those two knockdowns in the seventh round.
No, three knockdowns.
Yeah,
the three knockdowns overall. So,
if they would have just
scored it a 10-10 round for the last round, it would have been a draw. But they gave it to Pascal, which they should have, because you could only score the action that you saw. And although it was very brief, technically, Pascal did the better work in that very brief period of time in the eighth round.
Yeah.
But you had to give it to him.
Yeah, he was the aggressor there, you know. So,
yeah,
that's how he, you know, had to do it. But, you know, I was kind of like, teasing about what would be next there I know you said there probably was rematch clause there for Marcus Brown. I was saying,
yeah,
you know,
he had
maybe Ciampa's, yeah. I was going to say, like, you know, Ciampa's cow could face Demetri Vivol again in a rematch. since he now has the top spot in the WBA, he could go after Vivol again.
But
he could say,
funny,
yo, Vivol was running. Vivol was running.
He was. He was. But the funny thing I saw is Marcus Brown was on Twitter talking about how he is a winner in real life and people are just hating on him just to be haters. Does he not realize that people are hating on him because he beat and constantly stalks his baby moms? Does he not understand that? Like, is he really oblivious to that? Right? Like, does he think that people, first of all, nobody thinks about Marcus Brown. Literally, the only thing people know about Marcus Brown is that he beat up his baby mama. Ask the average boxer fan about Marcus Brown. They'll be like,
they don't really know about him. My thing that concerned me was that they actually had some people in the crowd that were actually caring for Marcus Brown. I'm like, wait, what? Like, how?
Well, he is a native New Yorker.
He is.
So,
like, come on,
I'm
man. I'm
assuming it was a couple of New Yorkers in there cheering for him because I wouldn't have cheered for him. He's the piece. You know, we know what he is.
Yeah, man. Like, yo,
we know
come on. Like, if you in the streets there in New York, and you mean to tell me that some dude was out there baby mama, so I'm like, nah, man. Come on.
But, you know what? Not to diminish domestic violence, but, you know what? If it was, like, a couple incidents and he got past and he got help and stuff like that, I could understand. But what really bothers me is the constant talking. Leave this woman alone.
Right.
Why is this still an ongoing thing? It's over. It's over.
Yeah, it's,
leave it alone.
Like, wrap it up, B.
Yeah, like what's wrong
like,
with this? Like,
look,
that's what really
like,
bothers
come
me.
On, like, you need to tell me that, man, it's almost like he didn't even, like, honor the, like, there had to be, like, some type of restraining order put on.
Yes,
he
has a
like,
restraining order.
All right, yo, like, come on, dude. He's still,
he don't care.
Still
that's a piece
the
of paper.
Chair. I'm like, come on.
That's a piece of paper to him.
Oh,
it's just
man.
A piece of paper to him. And that's what's really unfortunate. Because, you know, listen, let's keep it real. A lot of this shit only escalates. It only escalates.
Yeah.
So if this dude is ignoring a court order, is willing to risk his freedom, you think this dude ain't going to end up killing this woman one day? And then everyone's going to act like they didn't see it coming. They should have saw the signs. Why didn't we do anything? Well, Fox didn't even mention it. You know?
Nope.
They didn't even mention it at all. The only person that I heard mentioning it was John Pascal in the press conference. That was it. Nobody mentioning it.
Nobody. Not the announcer. Dude that be hyping up the fight. Nothing in the weigh
like,
in and nothing like that. I'm like, man, come on,
and Marcus
man.
Brown, stop saying people hating on you. No one's hating on you. We just don't like people that beat up their baby mamas and constantly stalk them. Like it's not hate. Like,
yeah,
man. You punch people in the face in the ring, not outside the ring.
Yeah, not outside the ring.
I don't think that's too much
to ask for. Yeah, you know what I mean? So, so that's, you know, kind of like a little piece of karma right there for
where's
Marcus
Mike Grady?
Brown.
He's not calling in tonight?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know where Mike Grady is, man. Because, you know, he claimed that he didn't. You know, he claimed that he didn't. He didn't watch the fight yesterday, so.
No!
He,
no. Mike Grady, I hope you're listening to this. You are a clown, Mike Grady. You are a clown. How dare you not watch this excellent card? The card was great, man. It was action throughout. From the first fight, when Curtis Stevens got smoked, yo. Action throughout.
Yo. Oh, yeah, about that fight. Like, I didn't even know that they actually had Curtis Stevens as a favorite in that fight against Wally Omotosa. Like,
I would put some money on that.
Like, Curtis Stevens, like, he didn't have, like, about five losses in a row or something. Like,
yeah.
Come on, bro.
He started off 23-0. And then he went 7-6 in his last 13 fights, basically. So he's been moving a lot lately.
And
so it's
he
like,
had
yeah,
been,
he's lost.
Yeah, he did. He is like bouncing up and down from middleweight. Like, come on, man, he got knocked out by David Lemieux, man.
Yeah.
He lost to Hassan and Dom, man. Like, man.
Yeah, he looks very bad. I hope he can retire because he's gonna get beat up really badly. I hope he saved a little bit, whatever money he made. I hope he saved it. You know, it's over for him. It's definitely over for him. But what'd you think about the main event, man? What'd you think about Konacki versus Areola? I think you got to put it at the top of the list when it pertains to fights of the year. I mean, just nonstop action, man. What'd you think about it?
Punches and bunches is pretty much like an understatement for that. I was more surprised about the performance of Chris Areola in this. Because you know what my expectation was? I thought Konacki was going to show up, please the crowd, show out, and get a stoppage victory. But Chris Areola, basically came there, to fight.
And that was a good thing to see, man.
Yeah, and he pretty much made, for me, he kind of like made the best effort out of this in a long time in his professional career. For him to throw over 1,000 punches, at 38 years old or something like that, being in the game as long as he has been,
man.
You never expect that. From him.
What's crazy about it? He didn't have to do that. He already made his money. He's had a long career. He didn't have to do that. People thought he was there to just be an opponent. I thought it was going to be a heavyweight slugfest as long as it lasted. I'm still surprised that it went the whole 12 rounds. Honestly, I thought one of them was getting knocked out. There was a point in the fight where Konacki hit Areola so hard that Areola literally took a step back, backed up, took a deep
breath. Backed up and took a breath,
And then he just went right back in. I was like, wait a minute. What is going on here? Like, why? this dude must be on his
He did that a couple of times in this fight.
Yeah.
He did. And the thing is, but I was saying at the beginning of the show was that, when, Konacki had Chris Areola in a little bit of trouble or where he kind of like may have affected Chris Areola, Areola just said, I'm going right into Konacki. And I'm going to either tie him up or I'm going to just fight on the inside to shorten or smother his punches. And so that's basically what he did. For most of the fight where, he was in trouble or where he kind of like had a lot of space because if there was some space between those two, Adam Konacki was just going to be throwing the punches and they were going to be crisp and they were going to be hit. When it was up close, he just had two guys right there just throwing
just
back and forth. Well, back and forth.
Each other
and the thing about it is with Chris Areola, I mean, a lot of times you saw him like throwing – a few punches, at a time. Either was like one time, I saw him throw like four straight jabs with his right hand.
With the same hand, right?
And I think it was after he hurt his left hand. And it's like, he hurt his left hand, and he's still throwing these punches, man. He was still using the left, man.
The
left, but it wasn't like he was gonna say, my hand is hurt. I'm going to, check out. I'm going to call it, call it a day or anything like that. Nope. He didn't do that. He kept fighting.
Like, honestly, I think PBC should give him one more nice payday. Like, just based off that performance, he deserves it, man, because he, listen, he could have packed it up after he broke his hand. He was going back to the corner holding his hand like, damn, this hurt. But he still ain't give up, man. Like, that is what, yo, he got balls, man. Or cojones, since he's Mexican.
Yeah.
He got it, man. I'm telling you, man.
Yeah, mucho cojones.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, yeah, that's kind of like, you know, what I was saying after the fight was that, you know, he was able to make pretty much a good account of himself. And,
yeah,
you know, make a great effort there in this particular matchup. And, you know, props to him for that. And I know that, you know, after the fight, you know, he was saying, like, yo, if he was able to get the win, then he may, you know, call it a day. But, you know, they were just egging him on, saying, like, after this performance, you know, maybe you could get, you know, have another fight there. And I kind of was like, yo, I don't know who else is out there that he could basically fight. You know, maybe, you know, they have boy Efia Jogba out there, but I don't want to see Ariola out there with Efia Jogba, because that's not going to be good enough performance for yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, too, is like, you know, watching this fight, I was like, yo, these two guys are a good match for each other, but if they fought anyone that was tall and that could use their jab very well, they would be... They would be just chewed up and spit out.
Now, what about Ariola versus a Joe Joyce?
Oh, you know what? That was actually Joe Joyce was the possible matchup that I would have for Adam Kalnacki before he would be able to contend for a world title, because that is something that could be right there as far as like, okay, Adam Kalnacki can't, you know, fight for a world title, so he needs to stay busy fight. But who else is out there that he could go ahead and fight that is, you know, a little bit above Chris Ariola, you know? And that was my idea, was Joe Joyce. But if you have Joe Joyce, you know, going up there against Chris Ariola, hey, that could be a back and forth fight between those two. But for me, Joe Joyce has a little bit more, you know, oomph behind his punches than Kalnacki does. So
yeah, but it's
I don't
hands
know
back enough to deal with Ariola.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. If Ariola, you know, works a little bit more on his defense, like you know, Goosey was saying that he was doing, then, you know, maybe it could, you know, make it more of a fight. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, Joyce couldn't – what was it? Joyce had that decision against Jennings, right? So, I mean,
yeah,
maybe
that was
Ariola could see.
Man.
Yeah, so – but, yeah. That.
Well, who are you wanting to call Nacky fight next?
That's what I'm trying to figure out, because – I'm not seeing, like, who else is out there that he could potentially fight, because a lot of these fighters in the heavyweight division pretty much have a fight lined up for them. I mean, except maybe Brett Pulev.
Bob Arum not doing that.
Yeah, he's not going to do that. So that's why I was like, yo, there really isn't that many options out there, you know, for Kalnacki.
Yeah,
except
Pulev was out
for...
with Dinu. So imagine Kalnacki smothering him.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe your boy Dominic Brazil. Because
I'll watch it.
He's a tall guy, but we've seen in the past that Dominic Brazil doesn't, you know, really use his height and reach that well against smaller fighters. And smaller fighters have been able to get into Dominic Brazil. So a guy like Adam Kalnacki, that could work very well there as far as like
I have an idea.
Having a fight. Yeah.
Kalnacki.
What is it?
versus Oscar Rivas for the WBC interim title.
We don't know what's going to go on in reference to the WBC.
Yeah, we do.
Everything is still unclear.
We
do. I'm telling you, it's still unclear. Your boy passed those tests, and we still have a whole bunch of things that need to be cleared out. It's saying, like, he passed before
system.
And after.
Yeah.
Hey, watch what I say. They're going to, you know what they're going to do? They're going to do the thing for Dylan White, similar to what they did with Luis Neri. Watch.
Oh my God!
What?
I'd be pissed off.
What?
I'd be pissed off.
They're going to do it. If not, then they're going to do the same thing that they did with Alexander Povetkin in his provisional. You know, provisional suspension or whatever it was, they still had a stipulation where they said, hey, you can have another shot. You just have to fight Bermond Severn. But, you know, we know that he got Osserine in his system for that. So that kind of like took him out of that particular instance. So, you know, maybe Dylan White will have that type of thing there once again where they'll just say, hey, we don't have everything that's clear as far as like what happened and why you had the positive test with UCAD. So what we're going to do is we're going to, I say they're going to order a rematch between White and Rivas for that spot.
I don't know about that. White doesn't deserve it.
Why you say that?
He cheated.
How do you know?
He
said it was an adverse finding and that it was a very small sample of those little chemicals in his
system. So he tested positive is what you're saying. The man tested positive. That's the bottom line. Come on, man. He don't deserve
hey,
it.
Just like Povetkin, right?
Oscar Rivas versus Adam Konacki. You heard it here first. WBC interim title.
Oh man, if they do that, you know, that Dylan White is going to be super pissed. He's going to be super pissed. Oh man,
he only got himself to blame.
For those listening in live, if you want to get in on Vox and Talk, you could call in 347-237-5539. Just wanted to, like, go into a couple of other things there that, you know, happen around the boxing circles. Oh, man, you had the whole thing there with your boy that was having a hometown fight of sorts, you know, over there.
Nah. Come on, man. We ain't talking about that. Come on, man. Come on, man. Where did that drop? I read about it. It sounded boring. Saw it. Still was boring. like, come on, man. We don't want to hear about Irish Mick Conlon. Just a garbage card.
Hey, he's supposed to be that next contender out there that's supposed to have all that hype.
Just beat him to Shakur Stevenson and be done with it. Please.
Well, you know, speaking of Shakur Stevenson, he was supposed to be fighting for that WBO version of the featherweight title against Oscar Valdez. I mean, Top Rank won the purse bid, they were the only one that bid anyway, for the WBO title between Oscar Valdez and mandatory contender Shakur Stevenson. But Oscar Valdez said, hey, man, you know what? I'm kind of big and, you know, it's kind of hard for me to make 126 pounds. So I'm going to go up to 130 pounds. And I would like to fight the Gilbert Schultz for that WBC super featherweight belt. And so that leaves the WBO title there for Shakur Stevenson to fight whoever is going to be available. A lot of people feel that it's going to be Carl Frampton.
Joey Gonzalez.
You think that they'll have Gonzalez ready for the fight against Shakur Stevenson?
He wants
oh,
it.
Man, he's got
he wants
money.
It. He's
he
already
he wants
talking
it.
About it.
Oh, man. He's probably going to be. Oh, he's going to be food, man.
You think so?
He's going to be. I think he's going to be food, man. He's going
to
be food.
Well, he'll be paid handsomely to do it.
Yeah, he'll be paid handsomely. They're going to have it, you know, of course. They probably have it in Newark once again. And... you know, have a sellout crowd or whatever it is, and Bill Shakur Stevenson up, and he'll go ahead get that win and be the WBO featherweight champion. But Oscar Valdez, man, I mean, you can tell me that you wouldn't want to have that type of fight of that magnitude against Shakur Stevenson. You think he has more of a chance against Miguel Burchell?
Well,
know,
Burchell is easier to hit. And Burchell is a little bit more money than Stevenson.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little bit more money. But then after that, then what? He'll go up against Jamel Herring after that?
Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, Valdez said that he would want to fight Jamel Herring, unlike Miguel Burchell. But that still remains to be seen if that's, you know, going to basically take place there. So so you do have that. And then also, you know, we have this whole news about your boy Tyson Fury, man. I'm like, you had those rumors about him fighting Charles Martin, but apparently since Charles Martin walks like a god, Tyson Fury didn't want to step up to a god, right? So you also had Jarrell Miller as a potential opponent, but I guess you couldn't have two guys in the ring that had too much stuff in their system beforehand. So they didn't want to have that potentially happen once again. So Tyson Fury finds a guy in Otto Wallin who I'm like, I don't know where they found him from.
Sweden,
they say
baby.
That, I mean, Sweden, but they say that he is like a great contender there. I'm like, how is this like? Much different than the Tom Swartz, where Tom Swartz apparently magically, inexplicably was in the top three in the WBO rankings. I'm sure you could probably put that against Valakrell or whoever the WBO president is, since he, you know, that guy wants to still wants to go off about saying all these fighters are ducking Terrence Crawford, but you have guys like Tom Swartz being in the rankings as high as he was. But Otto Wallin is kind of like similar to that. The WBA put him at number four in their rankings. So it's like, who are these guys, and how are you going to position them to be part of the top four? Who are these guys who fought? I have no idea who these guys fought.
Listen,
and
he is the greatest fighter in the history of Sweden, man.
Oh, man, is that like is that like your boy was like the second greatest fighter
in Albania? You talking about
in Albania?
What's this? Listen, man, I don't want. Listen, he's coming to fight. I'm telling you, man. Listen, this is a big opportunity for him. Okay, a lot of people don't know this, but professional boxing has been banned in Sweden for many years. And the ban was just lifted recently. So he is basically the first of the new crop of Swedish fighters. So he has a lot of people backing him. He has a lot of fans. I'm telling you, they're going to turn out for him, man. Out of Wallet, man. Sweden, man. We coming. Can't wait.
Hey, if he's going to have a lot of fans, he might need it because – I don't know if this is going to be, completely confirmed, but they have this scheduled for September 14th, and they might have it at the T-Mobile Arena. I don't know if that's going to actually be the case, but, man, they better not say that they booked T-Mobile Arena for Tyson Fury against Otto Wallin. And here's the other thing on top of that, right? So you have Tyson Fury's previous fight, that took place there against Tom Spores. What type of a card did they put together for that fight?
Garbage.
But
that's top rank. Because Bob Arum believes that fans pay for the main event. He doesn't care about the undercard. And that's always been his philosophy. Fans only care about the main event. Well, you sold 5,000 tickets, Bob. Clearly, fans weren't responsive to your main event. Is he going to basically stack this card with Mexican fighters, Mexican Independence Weekend in Las Vegas?
I don't know, man. I don't know. He would have had, somebody out there, but he doesn't really have that type of a, big draw there to bring most of the Mexican crowd out there. What is out there for him where he could, get something for him? It's not going to be like, Ramirez. Can't really do that. I don't know what's out there for him, man. It's going to be hard luck for him because he's going to have another 5,000.
Covered his bear.
It's going to be another 5,000 tickets sold. For that particular matchup, because you don't have much else out there. Most of these guys are, kind of like books. So, what you gonna do, man?
Maybe you can put Burt Schelt on the card.
You probably could. You probably could put, Burt Schelt
on
the card.
Yeah, put Burt
Schelt on
the card,
make a defense. That could have been a perfect date to have Burt Schelt against Herring for those championships and unify the championships. You could have had it right there on that date. If you're going to book September 14th for Tyson Fury and you need something that could be good to fill up as a co-feature, there's your co-feature. Miguel Burt Schelt, Jermell Herring, unify the belts. Burt Schelt, step up and fight Jermell Herring, damn it.
And he's not going to do it. Why can't they move the Navarrete card? Because it was August 31st. The real main event got taken off the card. So why can't they move the Navarrete-Baca fight to Las Vegas on September 14th?
Yeah, that's the thing, man. They should just go ahead and scrap the thing there. You know, that's happening. That's supposed to happen there for what? August 17th, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're not going to have, what, that Magdaleno Rivera fight? That's pretty much out. So
exactly.
Just
maybe
have
they can put Saucedo on the card. Saucedo is a decent ticket seller. I'm trying to think of the Mexican guys that they got. They don't really have that many fighters.
Yeah,
I didn't
really
even
don't.
Realize that. And Carlos Adams, what is he, Dominican? That's like Mexican, but not.
No.
So it's like, you know, really...
I mean, but here's the thing, though. It's like, you know, like you say about Bob Arum really focusing on the main events and not really focusing on the undercards. He's kind of like focusing most of his attention on what's going to be happening August 31st, as you know, Vasyl Lomachenko will be, you know, trying to get that WBC lightweight championship against Luke Campbell. So it's like, he's going to be having most of his energy on that instead of two weeks later with Tyson Fury going up against Otto Wallen. So, I mean, what else are they going to be, you know, basically doing out there at Top Rank if you have most of your eggs in the basket with Vasyl Lomachenko and not really, you know, putting something in with Tyson Fury 2 weeks later?
That's going to be
that's,
a disaster,
you know, kind of like
a,
that's going to, you know, really hurt things there. And it kind of like, you know, says, okay, you have this type of deal with Tyson Fury. Like, you must really think that you're going to get most of that money back, or pretty much, like, usually you go into these investments to try to make a profit. So if you're going to invest whatever the deal that you had with Tyson Fury, okay, you have one fight against Tom Forrest. Now you're going to have another one here against Otto Wallen. The fight with Deontay Wilder isn't until, you know, 2020, February 2020 at the earliest.
If it happens. Because
so,
I can guarantee you, if Ruiz beats Joshua again, sorry, Tyson. Sorry, buddy. It's going to be Wilder versus Ruiz.
Like, so it's going to be like, yo, what's he going to do, you know, after that, you know? So he's going to have to, you know, hope for the best as far as, like, yo, you're going to be waiting for Deontay Wilder, and Deontay Wilder might not be, you know, available for him there in that instance. And speaking of that thing with September 14th, the reason, kind of like the reason why Tyson Fury has that date at that location is because of what's been going on with Saul Canelo El Campeón.
El Campeón!
So, the quote-unquote unified middleweight champion, as
not anymore.
Put them in quotes.
Not anymore.
Supposedly had fights lined up for him. First, it was against light heavyweight champion Sergey Kovalev, and that fell through. That kind of like blew up, and that was done. Then we kind of heard that there was rumblings that he would be facing the IBF mandatory Sergey Derevyanchenko, and that fight fell through. And apparently, because of Sergey Derevyanchenko's status as the IBF mandatory, they were supposed to make a fight between Canelo Alvarez and Sergey Derevyanchenko, or that mandatory timeline would expire and Canelo Alvarez would have to give up that IBF championship. And apparently that's what ended up happening. The IBF made the decision to strip Canelo Alvarez from that IBF middleweight championship. And now it is vacant, and they're supposed to have some type of fight with Sergey Derevyanchenko against the next highest-ranked contender that is available. Could be Gennady Golovkin. We don't know if that's going to be, you know, the case, but that remains to be seen. Now, you know, there is a possibility that Canelo Alvarez will be fighting WBO middleweight champion Demetrius Andrade. And to me, that kind of like doesn't make much sense, because if you're going to make a fight between Alvarez and Andrade, why couldn't that have been the first fight that you would be talking about?
Because he wanted to keep his damn title, and he didn't know that jackass Golden Boy decided to forego the purse bid. Why would they? Yo, I'm just pissed off hearing you talk
like
about
the whole
it.
Thing. Like the whole thing is an absolute mess. It's an absolute mess. And we're going to like talk about this in a little bit more in depth, because this is not necessarily the only thing going wrong with Golden Boy Promotions. But, you know, I mean, my thing here with this thing here with Canelo Alvarez, I mean, they're talking about, you know, this thing where he was kind of like distraught and disappointed about what was going down with the negotiations between Canelo Alvarez's team and Sergey Derevyanchenko's team. But, you know, it's kind of, you know, funny that you would have the members of Golden Boy Promotions pretty much back Robert Diaz, who is the matchmaker for Golden Boy Boxing, Golden Boy Promotions, and not that the money man, the man that gets all the attention, the man that brings the money towards Golden Boy Promotions, Saul Canelo Alvarez. And that, you know, he said, you know, on his social media accounts that he said he did not have any knowledge of any agreement that the matchmaker, Robert Diaz, had made and signed, that he, you know, basically promised to make a deal before the IBF deadline and didn't necessarily make a deadline towards it. And if he didn't make a deal, then they could go ahead and strip Canelo of the IBF belt.
God, that is so stupid.
And the thing about it is, like, even if that deal that Robert Diaz made to the IBF, whether it was public or not, you don't make the challenger have all the power in the, a negotiation like this. You don't. Canelo is the man. If he wants to have the fight made, make the fight. Don't make it where, oh, you know what, oh my God, oh, I gotta make this fight happen. I'll just put out an offer, and then they're going to go ahead and accept it, and we'll be all good. Because that's pretty much what Robert Diaz kind of like felt with this situation, is that he said, yo, you know, you could go ahead and, you know, do what you have to do, because we're going to be able to make this deal with Sergey Derevyanchenko. Don't worry about it. We got it.
Exactly.
I'm like, come
ridiculous,
on, man.
Ridiculous, man.
Like, nah, they didn't do that. And I know that, you know, Sergey Derevyanchenko may have asked for $7 million, and they were offered $5 million or $5.5 million. But that's beside the point.
He probably thought that Canelo knew. He probably thought Canelo knew, and that Canelo wouldn't want to lose his title.
Yeah, but
it's just crazy. Like, I don't understand the situation, man. And the crazy part is, now he's basically going to be forced to fight Andrade, which is a good fight, but had he known he was going to fight Andre, he would have asked for the exception so he could have three belts on the line.
Right,
like,
exactly.
Dude.
Like, all he would have had to do is just go ahead and say, yo, make this fight with Andre. You make this fight with Andre, then we'll go ahead and we'll apply for the exception. We'll pay this step-aside money. You know, we'll make that happen.
Exactly.
You know, and I know the IBF is, you know, notorious for doing what they do, but come on, man. Like, first of all, y'all didn't have any type of mandatory contender until April of this year.
Exactly.
None.
So they would have granted the exemption. They definitely would have
granted
it. Especially since Canelo just won the title.
You're
finally in
the
Canelo business. You're finally collecting those Canelo sanctioning fees. They would have granted
you're getting that
the
percentage.
Exemption. Yeah.
Like. Like, you're getting the percentage from, you know, Canelo Alvarez. I mean, it's like, look, it's like more, you'd be getting more money off this than what you were getting from Anthony Joshua when Joshua held the IBF title. So whether Joshua wanted to honor the mandatory or not, you would still be getting the money from Canelo Alvarez if he defends the title against someone else, particularly against a guy like Demetrius Andrade, who is a WBO champion, who wants to fight Canelo Alvarez, and it would have been pretty much the fight to decide who is the number one middleweight in the world. And you didn't want any piece of that as an IBF?
Yep.
Like, come on, man. Like, that, that didn't make any sense.
That just lets you know that Canelo is definitely telling the truth. Because he's like, now I gotta fight this guy.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, and one other thing that could have possibly hinted that Canelo was telling the truth is now we have somebody else that's in the Golden Boy stable that has expressed their disappointment. So now you have lightweight Ryan Garcia.
King Rod,
saying that there was, disappointed there with Golden Boy Promotions. He said that he was supposed to fight Romero Duno in September, but he didn't want to do that because he wanted to be as a main event in November and not be a co-feature or co-main on a card that would be pretty much backed by him directly. So he was going to be, you know how some things goes with some of these boxers. Sometimes they have to put in the footwork themselves in order to push tickets so that people will come to the arena to see them fight. And they don't necessarily get into all of those guys that are kind of like small scale. They might have, you know, the local support, but not enough of the field support that, you know, that these promoters feel that would generate the money that would give them more profit. But here in the case with Ryan Garcia, I mean, you know, you got a guy that's young there. I mean, he's 18-0. He's, you know, one of those guys that is a, young, what they say, young phenom there.
And he's self-made. It's not like Oscar said that he built Ryan Garcia. Ryan Garcia built himself literally through social media.
Yep. You know, basically. So, I mean, what could you have out there? I mean, he's, seeing there that he could potentially be one of those contenders there in the lightweight division come next year. So that's the thing that you have going out there so far. So, my thing is that they're going to have to do something for Ryan Garcia to try to patch things up. But I just don't know if that's going to, basically happen out there for him. And it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks there in the Golden Boy stable with these two guys having those issues with Golden Boy Promotions.
These are your two most marketable guys.
Yep. Two most marketable guys. And like we've been saying, well, like, who else do you have there in Golden Boy Promotions? You really don't have, anybody really out there other than those two guys, I mean, we can't necessarily, they got Jaime Munguia, and that's another one.
Can't get his fight done.
Can't get a fight locked down. I'm like, come on, man. I'm like, yo. this is a guy here that's a world champion, and you telling me that you couldn't get this fight with Vargas tied down for him?
Hey,
like,
maybe Eddie
Hearn
is playing hardball on purpose. You know him and Octagon on beef.
Yeah, they do have like a little semi beef there, man. And I think that with Hearn working with the likes of Bob Arum and other guys, man. But the thing with Oscar De La Hoya, it's just a little mess, man. It's a mess. It's a huge mess there. So, I mean, that's pretty much most of what I've covered here on this show, man. Anything that you wanted to go through real quick?
Nope, you pretty much covered everything, man. I just can't wait to see how this Canelo situation plays out. I want to see who he's actually gonna fight, and I want to see if he and Oscar get into a little public little tiff.
I think that they might. I think that they just might, and that you will have a huge mess going on with Canelo Alvarez, with Golden Boy Promotions, and you're going to have those execs at the zone saying, like, yo, what's going on over there? Y'all going to have to straighten this out. We put up this money, man. We put up the money, man.
Yep,
we pay
you
money, man.
Hey,
and you're not paying.
Hey, listen, I got that cartel money, baby. You better come right. Oscar's going to have he's going to wake up next to a dead horse head in his bed. You better watch who you're messing with.
Oh, man. So, that pretty much kind of like seals it for this particular episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show, man. Y'all go ahead and subscribe to the podcast. That's going to be available on iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And you can also follow the Boxing Source on YouTube and on Instagram and on Facebook. We're going to probably, we're going to be taking a little break next week. Your boy's going to be on vacation in some remote location, so won't be able to do the show next Sunday. But you'll hear updates out and about on YouTube and things like that, so just be on the lookout for that. Big thanks to Matt for calling in on the show. Like I say at the end of every show, folks, Point of Boxing is a hit, and I can hit out of the same trade. On that note, I'm out. Have a good evening, everybody.
Bomb squad, baby.